You are listening to episode 283 of the Game Deflators Podcast. My name's John, and I'm joined by Ryan.
Hey, everybody, here at the Game Deflators Podcast, we like to talk about games we recently picked up, games we're currently playing, and we're keeping it brief and quiet in this week's Inflation Deflation Challenge.
So as you can tell, Ryan is back to recording, which is great because
so happy to be here.
Oh, dude, like it's fantastic with all the people that I've been recording with, but the not inconsistency, that wouldn't be the right word. It's more so the like, what am I going to do each week?
Type right.
Of thing. Who am I going to have on the podcast? Who am I going to be communicating with? It just doesn't happen like that when it's consistent with us. Right.
Back to the comfort zone.
Yeah, exactly. So it's pretty nice. But we're going to be talking about games we recently picked up and games we're currently playing. But first is an article summary about what's going on.
Yeah. So this week we're going to be hearing the dying screams from a little big planet. And then the success of Pirates may lead to democracy on the Xbox. We've got a few articles covering those things and so much more this week. Thanks so much for having me back on the podcast. I really missed everybody. John, why don't you tell us what you picked up this week?
Well, social media plugs first. See our new format that we got here. So you can find us on thegameinflators.com, our out-of-date website. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram and Threads at The Game Deflators, and it is at Game Deflators on X. That's right. They don't like the. We're on YouTube. You can find us there. And, of course, the podcast app you're listening to right now. Leave us a 5-star review. We'd greatly appreciate it. Now, for my pickups. I had no pickups initially, and then I remembered when you mentioned apples to apples, you were super confused. I picked up Farms Race. So Farms Race is a parody version of Catan made by the creators of Cards Against Humanity, where you are essentially building up a farm as animals and creating nuclear silos to blow up your opponents.
Oh, Farms Race, like Arms Race.
Yeah, exactly. So you're basically creating like nuclear weapons to wipe out the other farms, I think is the overall concept. And so there's like mutants and radiation, all these other things. And similar to Catan, where you're kind of, you know, gathering different resources
and trades. And
yeah,
stuff.
Resource
interesting.
Management. Yeah, so it's definitely a game that I've been wanting to play for a while, and I obviously did a Kickstarter backing on that, and then I also did a Kickstarter backer kit order for Crystalla via Dark Souls.
Oh yeah,
cat one. Yeah, so that one is their partner of Premium Edition Games, so it's always been good to have them on. And we talked to Barry and Phil last week, or I talked to Barry and Phil last week. Ryan decided to slack off and not show up again to his non-work job here at the Game Deflators Podcast. So, you know, just had to take up the mic with them. But yeah, so I backed that. That was a lot of fun talking to them last week. And then obviously picking up that game is going to be a good one because it's Souls, but it's also cats.
It looked really good in the trailer we saw.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think like graphically, it's everything that you could want in that style of game. Mm-hmm. And from what I'm seeing in the trailers, the gameplay is like pretty spot on, so I'm excited for it. So we'll see what comes of that. But as far as what I'm currently playing, you'll be happy to know that I have a secret game that I am playing.
I heard.
Yes, you have heard. Oh jeez, I just dropped the thing on my mouse there. So close call. So any guesses as to what the secret game could be?
Oh, that's right. I get like a guess a week question.
Yeah. Until the time I beat it, obviously.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. Is the game longer than 20 hours on how long to beat?
Well, damn it, dude. Now I gotta Google it. Okay.
Do you not know the answer to this already? Say that you build your games you play off this resource.
No, because this is one that my wife and I are both playing. So technically it's a secret game and we're both keeping the secret from you. How long to beat secret game? All right. Let's see. I didn't put in long. I just put how to. Then it came up with walkthroughs.
Play the game, finish the final level.
What was your question again? Is it longer than 20 hours?
Longer than 20 hours.
No.
Oh, man. So this is the only time I'm ever going to get to guess, basically.
Yeah.
Is the game so secret, John just played it without me knowing?
Any guess on what the game is?
Is it Let's go Eevee or Pikachu.
No, it is not. Okay. That would actually be like absolutely hilarious if that's the direction I went, was that title. No, it is not that.
Okay. If you don't beat it by next week, I'll try again.
We'll try hard. Okay, so as far as where I'm at now in Tales of Symphonia, I am at the Temple of Lightning. So we're in Tethiala, got through all of that good stuff. What's her name? Priscilla, I think, is her name. The little girl that has
the pink hair?
Yeah.
And the big axe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she's actually pretty good.
Yeah, I liked her character.
Dude, her whole like story just caught me off guard. Like, you go in the home and everything, and it's like, what's that smell? And it's like, oh, that's kind of weird. And then you see the body on the bed. It's like, she's been like with a dead body in here this whole time. And they're like, oh yeah, it's her dad. I'm like, wait, what? So that was all like sad moment, I guess. And then her calmness afterwards is realization of like, I'm just so sorry about what's happened. And it's like, your dad just died, and you're like zero emotion whatsoever, or not just died. You've been living in the house of this dude, and that's your reaction. Like, it kind of caught me off guard. But I guess that's that character's nature. But yeah, I'm at Temple of Lightning. I'm about halfway through. I started falling asleep in the middle of it. So I caught myself numerous times, like consistently walking into a wall, and I was like, yep, it's time to find a safe point. Yep. And, of course, I found myself walking into a wall at that point as well, trying to find a save point. So that sucked.
So what's like going on in the story at this point?
Geez, let me refer to it. We went to Sheena's village.
Okay, so you're like, I think last time we talked, you weren't even really like teamed up with Sheena yet.
No, so teamed up with Sheena. We ended up getting, what's his face, the other chosen from Tethiala. And then there,
the red hair guy,
yeah, him, the one that he's always talking about, like how beautiful he is,
yeah,
which is hilarious every time, you know, he mentions anything about himself or someone else, it's always about looks, so that's always hilarious. Let's see, I got through to Meltokyo sewers, which then led me to, of course, the city. We made our way out of that, and then went to the other dwarf's house to be able to get the crest for Priscilla, handled the initial etching after we went through the forest and everything else. Did meet up with that, I guess the guy that murdered somebody. I forget the criminal's name.
The blue hair guy?
Yeah, I forget his name offhand. I'm so bad with names.
Yeah.
Well, it's a lot of new characters, actually, that have come through. So it's not like, you know.
Your party expands quite a bit.
Yeah, you have like Rain and Lloyd, and you've got Kratos initially, and all of these different characters. That have kind of built up over this time, and all of a sudden it's like, oh well, here's Sheena in your party now, and then here's Priscilla, and here's the other guy, and then here's another person. I'm sure there's another person that's going to come through down the road. So yeah, that's where things kind of stand right there. But what I did find kind of cringeworthy in the game, though, is you're in the forest and the murderer comes in or whatever, and he's all handcuffed, and he's like, oh, I got to talk to this girl right now, and he's trying to talk to her, and at some point, like, Lloyd is just like, what are you doing? What's going on? And he just starts going off on this guy. And he's like, just standing there about how like he needs to talk to her. But Lloyd's just like, attack.
Yeah.
And just does his attack. I'm like, dude, the guy's literally standing there telling you that he needs to talk to her. And you just straight up attack. And it's like this cringy, like he's super young and he's on this adventure type of thing. And you could tell like he doesn't know any better because he's still so young.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not truly analyzing the situation. And I'm just sitting there like, why are we attacking this guy? Like, he hasn't done anything to us. He's just kind of chilling out. And yeah, Lloyd's just like sword happy all of a sudden. But yeah, and the instances with Kratos that have come through after the fact have been interesting too. Because you could tell like, well, I don't know if this is the case, but like he's playing both sides almost in a way. Like I can't gauge it completely. But I'm going to probably take a wild guess that he is really against the Desaians, and I forget the name of the other group, but you know, the half elves basically that turn into angels. I have a feeling he's against them, but he's not showing his full hand to Lloyd and his party, and that's kind of where we stand right now. So we all think he's really a bad guy, but I mean, if he really was, he would have tried to, you know, capture Colette and do all these crazy things. Oh, and Colette's gone too.
Yeah.
Yeah. She got carried away by a giant bird and some crazy maniac. So yeah, a lot of stuff going on. Obviously, if you've been keeping up on a week-to-week basis, you know my ramblings don't really amount to anything story-wise to really reveal anything pertinent that's going to ruin it for you. I guess outside of spoilers that I provide.
Yeah. I mean, so like the...
I'm not super consistent with my storytelling here on what's happening, but that's where I'm at. You've played the game. You know where things stand.
Yeah, the Kratos moment, or Kratos or whatever his name is, I was waiting for you so much to reach that moment in the game, because I always remember that as being such a standout part. And like I was telling John the story earlier, when I went into GameStop to buy that game originally, there was somebody else in the store, or somebody like walking out or something at the time. And he's like, dude, don't give Kratos anything. And I was like, what? I didn't even like understand what he was referring to or whatever. And then like at the time in the game where it happened, like that moment came back to me. And it's always stuck with me as like a weird thing about that game in my memory.
Well, you know, I gave him a bunch of stuff initially, and, you know, I was thinking, oh yeah, this guy's gonna be at the party for quite a while. And then he ended up, you know, bolting on us, and the whole situation that came from that. So overall, like, I'm kind of pissed that Kratos went the way he did in the game, because I did lose some equipment, but I'm so far in the game now at this point, it's whatever. And I think story progression wise, it's probably for the best that all that happened. Like, it caught me completely by surprise when that happened, like his whole, you know, face turn. I was like, whoa, okay, this is not exactly what I expected in this exact moment, but it did make sense that something big plot wise had to occur. Because like the whole going to the Tower of Salvation and Colette like finally, you know, rebuilding the world, or the world rebirth or world regeneration, that whole situation that comes up, that to me, it was like, okay, like we're doing this already. Like, this is super weird. Yeah. I know it's a longer game. What's happening? And so that happened. I'm like, okay, this makes sense. And oh, there's this whole other like opposite world where they have a chosen.
That was crazy too. Like, yeah, this game has like, that's the thing I love about this RPG, is that it feels like it has all the things that you find in an RPG, but like in this one. It's got the chosen one, the other world, the good guy turning bad guy, the good guys who are bad guys but seem like the heroes of the world. And it just has like all these different things that it's like every so often you're turning this big stone where it's like, oh wow, now there's this whole other thing that we gotta like go that is totally the opposite direction of what we were imagining this story was going to play out originally. It's got the temples of all the different elements and stuff.
Well, and then Sheena's ability to like summon those as well. So right now my party consists of Rain. I think that's her name, Rain, right? Rain, Sheena, the red-haired guy, and Priscilla. Like, that's what I've got. And honestly, like, that's the best party I've had so far in playing the game.
Because you got tired of hearing Demon Fang. Demon Fang.
Not really. I started getting, I guess a lot of them. That kind of reminded me of like Star Ocean 2, where the characters are like consistently saying their moves all the time.
The combat gets fun though, once you start to get like more like combo stuff going and things.
Yeah, I haven't done too much in the combo stuff, but I'm still picking up like battle-wise things that are happening in the game. The reason I like that party is because I have... the red hair guy is kind of like Kratos. Now, he does provide a little bit of healing. Rain, I have her because she puts up shields. She does full group healing. She removes status ailments. And then she does some attacking in the background. But for the most part, like, her goal is a support character. And then everybody else is like hard nose, like attacking. And she's able to kind of hang out in the background and do her thing. And that has worked the best.
Who do
so
you
far.
Play as? Mostly?
I play as Lloyd. Yeah, I don't mess with any of the other characters. I probably could, but there's a comfort level in just kind of using the same character like that over time. I used to do it like, and it reminds me so much of Star Ocean in that respect too. And I would play as, I think it's Klaus is his name in Star Ocean. I forget the name offhand. If I remember that, good Lord. And I think Rena is a female character. So if we look that up and check me on it, I'm sure.
Which Star Ocean?
Star Ocean 2, second story. I think it's Klaus and Rena, if I recall.
Oh, is that the one that just got that really cool remake?
Yeah, dude. It looks awesome. Was it Darren that was talking to me about it? I think Darren was telling me that he actually bought that and really enjoyed it. Just the way that they redid those elements was the perfect way to do that game. But yeah, so it reminds me of Star Ocean that I would always play as the main male character, and like that was it. And everybody else kind of did their thing automatically.
Claude.
I was close.
And Rena.
And, oh, look at that, dude. It's been like, I think 15 years since I played that game. So that's kind of scary. I remember those names. I mean, I guess I can't really say much. It's not super scary because you got like Final Fantasy 8 and 7 and 9. Like you remember various character names from there too. But yeah, so that's where I am in the game. I'm really liking it. And until next week on The Secret Game, see if you can figure that one out. Your turn.
All right. So I've been gone for quite a while. I didn't like buy any physical games in that time because that ain't me. But I guess I did buy one thing. So I went to Walmart like a month or two ago, and for $12, I got a DVD pack of like all the old DBZ movies, like Tree of Might, Lord Slug, Cooler's Revenge, Dead Zone, and World's Strongest. So that was a pretty good pickup for $12.
Did you watch them?
Yeah. They are way more bizarre. I posted something on Twitter. I'll have to show you later. Or Instagram, actually. And then game-wise, I was trying to play some games to get rid of some stress. I've been having just a bunch of stuff going on in my life, so gaming is definitely where I turn in those times of need. So while I was taking care of my stuff, I was hanging out with my Xbox at night, trying to play whatever I could. I was playing Persona 3 Reload, and then I dropped that. And I know that you were talking to somebody in one of the podcasts about dropping that too. So, you know, same. And then after that, I picked up Control. So I had tried playing Control with my wife years ago because I think it was out on like PlayStation Plus or something. And I just couldn't really get into it. She couldn't really get into it. But this time I got pretty into it, and like reading all the intel and stuff was very cool. It's got a very kind of like next level X-Files kind of feel to it. And I was really enjoying what I was playing there. But then Game Pass, Diablo 4 rolls out for Game Pass, and I'm like, oh man, I've been dying to play this game. And I never wanted to give, you know, anybody my money for it, because screw Bobby Kotick, and you know, I'm subscribed to Game Pass, it's just there, boom, I'm gonna do that. So I picked the Sorcerer, which is like my go-to Diablo class, considering I've mostly only played 3 and 1. I never played 2 somehow, but it's good, and it's also just not as compelling as I wanted it to be. Like I probably put like 20 hours or something into it, and by the end of it, I'm just kind of like going around to different objectives. I finally started to get like a little bit more ability to change into a more interesting build. It's just the way that the Sorcerer build class was structured. It's really just like, all right, here's all your different, you know, levels that you unlock new skills. And then you invest points into skills to, you know, push yourself further down that tree. But basically you choose like, okay, do I want to do fire spells, ice spells, or lightning spells? And then you've got like 2 or 3 different ways you can kind of flavor that, whether you're trying to do like closer range or farther range or critical hits or whatever the case might be. So that was kind of, just as that was starting to get old, I started to finally get into like the tier of equipment where it had more interesting, like, all right, you'll get 2 automatic points in this skill. And it's like, well, that's not even like a lightning skill, so why would I ever use that? Well, I started to find gear that would let me use just like the conjuration class of abilities and stack like bonuses for having multiple conjurations, have different trigger effects that can make multiple conjurations. So I'm running around summoning like ice blades and a lightning bolt that runs through everything, and like fire hydra heads that like shoot fireballs at my enemies, and just kind of like controlling the battlefield, summoning stuff. And that was starting to get pretty fun. And that was a couple of weeks ago that I started to get into that. And then after a while, I just kind of fizzled out. I came home and started, you know, just getting back into regular life and things. The Delta emulator is out for iPad now that the iOS had that whole settlement thing where they have to allow more stuff on. So I downloaded that and tried that out. That works pretty good. On the iPad, I was messing around with that a bit. And then I actually just, I was like, okay, am I really going to carry my iPad and a controller with me if I want to like emulate games? Not really. Like, that's something that I could do in a certain situation, in a certain setting at home if I wanted, but not really good for contemporary regular use. So I busted my Vita back out after trying to put it in the driver's seat a few months ago, and picked up right where I left off in Final Fantasy IX. So right now, I'm kind of refocusing my gaming energy into Final Fantasy IX. I'm going to see if I can finally finish that game, because I'm pretty near the end, I think. I'm at the Desert Palace. I kind of haven't played for months, so I don't remember exactly what was going on. But like, I know that I'm trying to like fight the queen or fight this Kuja guy or something. I don't know.
Dude, that's one thing I really, you know, kind of on that, like Tales of Symphonia, one of the things I really love about that game is they have the synopsis section.
Yeah, when
right?
you start playing again.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's the best feature in a game.
Dude, I swear, like every single RPG needs that type
the
of
The Tales games setup. Are really good, the things that they do.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll get into kind of some of this with folks our age, right, when it comes to yeah. gaming here in a moment. But yeah, I mean, I really wish, like, Final Fantasy IX is a great example. Years ago when I was playing Final Fantasy VII and I put it down for, you know, probably a year, 2 years, whatever it may be, probably longer to be honest. And then diving into it, it's like, well, what the heck happened? Like, I got to find a walkthrough and see what did I do and, you know, where am I at today? And
yeah.
And what's the story like? And try and remember all of these different things. Whereas Tales of Symphonia, it's just, hey, the group went to X place and met with X individual, and they're supposed to go to this place, which is north of the following city. And it's like, oh, cool.
Sweet. All right. All the stuff I wanted to know. Thanks, game.
That's all I needed.
There's a couple of Pokemon games that do that on the DS. I think it was like Black and White or something, where it's like when you boot it back up, it shows you like, here's like the last like five routes or like Pokemon you caught or whatever. It's like the last like five or six major things you did before you stopped playing.
Now, with that being on the DS, is it in color or is it in black and white?
Right.
I'm trying, Ryan. We'll get there one day. Hey, look, you know, bad dad jokes are a thing on here, right? So, all right.
You won bad dad, John.
Oh, yeah. anything else here for you?
I did play a little bit of Elden Ring in there at one point, just because like I know the DLC for that is coming out, and I still haven't beaten the game. But man, I did even crazier this time. So the first time I played through, I got the like Moonlight Katana or whatever, which is just such a cheapo weapon because you just like send out these huge sword blasts that do tons of damage. Well, this time, way sooner than when you can get that Moonveil Katana, there's this like blood dagger that you can get that just destroys enemies. And then I also did like a dragon build this time with the Dragon Communion, and the Dragon Rot Breath that inflicts Scarlet Rot
yeah.
just shreds bosses.
Dude, Scarlet Rot is like one of the roughest things in that game.
Yeah.
I hate it so much.
But I was like killing it. I played for maybe like 25 hours or something, and I got up to the capital city, which is, I just barely got past the capital city in my original playthrough at like 120 hours.
Gotcha.
So I just like, and I didn't do a lot of the extra side stuff, and I didn't do a lot of like going into all the little dungeons. And I think just the fact that I didn't have to die as much, because I could just like shred a lot of bosses and I didn't have to try to go this like weird route to get the Moon Veil as soon as I could once I learned what it was during my first playthrough. It's just like the second run through that game felt so much easier to get through. And I still probably not going to beat that or get the DLC anytime soon. I think the next thing I'm really looking forward to is Thousand Year Door. I mean, we're like a month away from that coming out. I think we're actually going to get like previews and stuff this week.
Well, I mean, it's just a HD remake basically, right?
Well, I mean, that's a thing, but what else are they going to add to it? Like, they added a few things to Super Mario RPG, and this is going to be way higher expected, you know, from the community wanting stuff. Like, people want there to be a whole Luigi side story in this game. But the, what was it? Arlo had a video the other day where he was responding to somebody saying that that doesn't seem like a good thing. I think it would be good to have that in there. But it's also really interesting that they're not marketing it as, like, Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door repapered or something like that. Like, it's just being advertised Paper Mario Thousand Year Door like it's a new game.
Honestly, I think missed opportunity. I think repapered would have been great.
Right?
I think they should have done it. Well, damn. Well, let's
Paper Mario just with a not an original ink mark over it because it's a copy.
Oh yeah, for sure. So discussion topic wise, I see you have a note here, but
So I was filling out the outline this morning as I was listening to all the intros and little bits and bobs of the episodes that I wasn't on. But yeah, I heard about the other guests that you had that had dropped Persona 4 Reload or the rum story. I completely forgot about the rum story.
Dude, yeah, I guess we'll state it again one more time.
Puke and Rally.
Yeah, it was great. So if you didn't catch that episode, it was... which episode was that? That was episode 279, I think, or 277? I think it was 277. Basically, I met with Chris of the Open Bar Miami podcast. He and I go back a long time, and we were talking different alcohols and things that they drink before they record. They actually do an afternoon podcast. So the fact that they're chilling, drinking beers and different liquors in the middle of the afternoon, I don't know if I envy them or what, but
dude, you can't drink all day if you don't start early.
That's true. So I was just telling the story about Ryan asked me to get him a drink and he wasn't expecting it. I guess he saw the color, thought it was gonna be whiskey. Turned out it was a rum. I didn't realize Ryan didn't like rum. And so we're starting, this is when we were recording at my old house in Mesa. And I think we were doing night recordings at that point, if I recall, because we were closer.
Yeah,
we'd record at night and we'd have a drink or something. And Ryan decided that...
That was two houses ago for you.
That was one house ago. It was my last house in Mesa.
No, that was the one in Chandler.
Nah, dude. The rum story that happened in Mesa. Because it was after I went out to out of the country, remember? And that was just before COVID. And I lived in that house because I caught COVID.
I always remember drinking at night at the house in Chandler.
We did. And then we picked it up again in Mesa. And then we, I guess at some point, transitioned when I moved here into earlier in the morning recordings at some point. That's what ended up being. And then obviously we have afternoon recordings prior to D&D nowadays. But yeah, gave you that little bit of rum and you thought it was some whiskey or bourbon. And next thing you know, Ryan, it just didn't hit him the right way and puking up a storm in the middle of the episode. It was great.
Sometimes that rum or sometimes just thinking about just when I watch people on TV, just drink straight vodka. I'm like, what is wrong with you?
Like, I can do straight whiskey. Like, I can do that rum. I actually like that rum specifically. And I'll drink it on the rocks, but yeah, if you're not expecting rum and you're expecting whiskey and you get that hint of it's a very sugary drink, technically speaking. So you get that hint of rum and it's just, it can be off-putting if it's not the right alcohol at the right time.
Well, besides discussing that, we were going to discuss, we'd seen some chatter in an article or a post or something about old people needing shorter games. As an old person, and by old I mean 34, it feels old. Trust me, you'll get there one day. And if you're already over that, then you know what? I just don't even tell me that it gets worse from here. I just expect that now.
Well, if they're already over that, they might want to re-listen to the episode because they've already forgotten what you just said.
They need a shorter podcast. They're not going to listen to this anyways. That's true, yeah. So, yeah. I fully agree with this. I remember being a kid and just having unlimited time for games. And now that I'm older, it's like, man, how am I ever going to get through these? I mean, you guys listen to me week in and week out, not finish games and complain about it. And I know there's tons of short experiences and you would get so much benefit out of actually finishing those titles and feeling good and being able to experience more different things. as opposed to me where it's like, I don't know, man, I'll just throw like another 20 hours at another Persona game and just, you know, it'll work itself out one day.
Dude, we're encroaching May and I'm still 29, 30 hours into Tales of Symphonia. I should have beat this game like 15 years ago. I would have beat this game already.
Do I have an inflation deflation or a new game's resolution? Do I know what that is?
We'll have to go back to the episode. But yeah, you have one. I don't remember what it is.
Gosh.
We wrote it down somewhere.
Yeah,
I know mine
is
Alundra.
In one of these notes. Yeah. I'll find it.
Mine is Alundra. It's the first time I've remembered it offhand. But point is like, I'm going to be going into May, probably June, having not started my new game's resolution. So I'm going to be jumping in from one RPG to the next. So probably no break in between. But it is nice that my wife and I do have our game together. So I have been playing that secret game with her as of late. And then we're kind of talking about what our next game is going to be as well. So we'll see when that happens. But hopefully we can beat the current game in the next week or two and then move on to the next one. But as Ryan was stating, there was an article or something that had come out recently, and it argued that video games are targeting the wrong people and that adult gamers need shorter games and younger players need the exact opposite, mainly because young people have a lot of time on their hands that we just frankly don't. And, you know, just in having Barry on last week, you know, we were talking about him with his new baby and all the time that needs to be put towards that. And he and his wife are still finding that time to game together. But stuff just gets even crazier from there, man. Like, at some point, I'm going to have a 5-year-old running around who is going to be doing different sports or something and having schoolwork coming home and dealing with, you know, dinner and all these other things. So that gaming time is going to significantly diminish. And so, and it's already bad enough, you know, 10:30, 9:30, falling asleep on the couch in the middle of an RPG. So I think this is 100% correct, as you were saying. Like, shorter game experiences need to be mass marketed to older gamers. If you want to keep older gamers like playing your game, it's either got to be a consistent, you know, live service game, which traditionally has kept me awake playing a live service game because I can play it, put it down, etc., and not have to worry about too much time invested in it, or shorter experiences that are like less than 8 hours. And like good story driven type content, right? Like
not, Senua.
Yeah, like Senua. That's a great example of a game that's less than 10 hours, fantastic story, great graphics, really gets you engaged. And when it's done, it's like,
what
wow.
What Remains of Edith Finch.
That was a decent one too. You know, I beat that one as well. And they're short games. I mean, they're just fantastic stories. And that's, at this point, that's what I'm looking for, right? I'm not looking to 100% a game. I'm not looking to complete one with as much stuff as I can get. I'm not looking to spend 60, 70 hours into a game to get its payoff. I do love RPGs and I want to play as many as I can, but I do need those like breaks in between of short, quick games to kind of say, yeah, I completed that and feel accomplished in the fact that like I beat a game.
Yeah.
Right,
not
now
everything could be Elden Ring, Breath of the Wild, Grand Theft Auto, Red Dead.
Yeah.
You know, all of that is great, but it's just like, I've not finished any of those games, you know, at all.
Yeah. And honestly, I think my next game might be Fallout New Vegas with my wife.
Oh, Bree's playing 4 now.
Is she? Nice. Yeah, I haven't played 4 yet, but New Vegas is one I have. And I think
New Vegas is the best one to play.
Well, I would argue 3 is pretty phenomenal, but I heard
New Vegas is better.
Yeah, I heard New Vegas is really good. So, but the cool thing is that you don't have to play those games in order.
Yeah.
So me saying like, hey, let's play Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah, but is she going to let you do that?
Yeah.
She plays the Pokemon games in order, even though they don't have to be in order.
She also learned that if she wants to play Fallout 1 and 2, she has to start the PC versions, which are like god-awful graphics.
What?
I mean, they're not god-awful graphics.
They're just, yeah.
They're dated, for sure. So they could use a remake, but that'd be like 30 years from now. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's part of the funny story, and I think I mentioned it last week too. We were talking about Fallout. She's like, oh, I want to play the Fallout games now, similar to Last of Us when we were watching the show.
Oh, yeah.
And we played Last of Us 1 and 2. And she's like, oh, so do you have all the Fallout games? I'm like, yeah, I got 3, New Vegas, and 4. And she's like, wait, what about 1 and 2? You don't want to play it. I'm like, you don't want to play 1 and 2. You don't want to. Now, they have great stories, and they have a lot of cool lore about the vaults and everything else built into it.
They're just totally different kind of game.
Yeah, and I have Brotherhood of Steel, but just not going to play Brotherhood of Steel on the PS2.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not the same.
I don't think anybody ever plays that one.
Well, I mean, and you have a Brotherhood of Steel Tactics or something. Oh,
there's a Tactics one too. Fallout Tactics.
Yeah, Fallout Tactics. So, and then you have 76 and you've got Fallout Shelter and things
like
that.
She watched the Noah Caldwell-Gervais video if she wants to get the information about those.
So I actually sent her a video. There was a guy that did, before we go back to our older gamer thing, there was a guy that created like every single Fallout shelter or vault that is canon and that we know about, and gave like an in-depth talk about like all of them and like what all the experiments were in each one and all the different things that happened. And I was like, wow, that's actually really cool. Like going in depth on, there was one where like the experiment that they had in the vault was 199.
Is Fallout the secret game?
No, it's not. 100. No, damn it. That's, you don't get a guess next week now. So you can guess your thing on like, is it XYZ, but I'm not going to answer. So yeah, it was like 199 women and one guy.
Yeah.
Like that was the vault experiment. And just stupid stuff like that. There was one where it was like one guy who had puppets, apparently. Like there's a whole comic that you could pick up in the games where it was called like the Puppet King or something. And so he had all these different puppets that were like that he would, it was him and a bunch of puppets basically in the vault. And yeah, I know. And so at some point he leaves the vault and he goes on like this murderous rampage against raiders and stuff. And they call him like the Puppet Man.
Nice.
Yeah, it's crazy. So if you haven't watched anything like that and you're listening, go check out some of his like Fallout vault lore things where they cover all of the different vaults. It's actually pretty cool, like when they go into those details. But back to our older people, like short attention span, clearly, because we're older. Yeah.
This is why.
Yeah,
we need shorter games so we could talk about other stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Anything else on this? Like,
I mean, no, I respect the idea, but it's hard to really mentally push past, like, I just usually don't feel like investing myself in those shorter experiences because I'm prepared for more, and generally I get pretty casual games. You know, I'm not usually on PC looking through the indie space where these types of rewarding shorter experiences are often going to be found.
Well, and I think one thing to kind of note as well is not everybody is in our shoes as far as being at this age and not having free time.
Yeah.
Like there's people at our age that probably have boatloads of free time because they probably don't have a job, or they don't have kids that they're raising or things like that. Or they might be single and they're our age and all they do is go to work, come home and game.
You have all you time.
Yeah, it's all you time. So if there's you time, you're going to be playing games if that's what you do. So not everybody's in the same boat, so I totally get it as far as you know, if the industry didn't just like create a whole bunch of short type experiences for gamers like us. But there are games out there, obviously, like we know of them, but they're not really what's mass marketed to us all the time, so that's kind of disappointing too. I end up finding out about these things years down the road, which I guess is kind of good because they're cheaper games at that point. But you kind of wish you'd find out about them sooner sometimes.
Yeah, so for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what do you have for us this week, John?
So Super Mario Maker, I was talking about this with Barry a few weeks back, I think 3-4 weeks ago.
When they were still trying to get the last level.
Yeah. And they beat the last level.
Yeah, I know. Actually, that was so great that it was like, oh, it's not even doable. It's TAS only. And then it's like, we did it anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So I got to get a kick out of that because that was like an AI. Well, it was developed, but only AI or something had beat it. So it's cool to see like people actually complete it. But so Super Mario Maker fans got to say goodbye to their game. But Sony unceremoniously has pulled the plug on Little Big Planet and 16 years of community creations dating all the way back to 2008 from what I was reading here. So this is Dustin Bailey at Games Radar, and this was super disappointing, dude. So like, unless, you know, Sony plans on releasing another Little Big Planet and putting all of the great content on like that new server, you know, great. But as far as I know, like they had hacking issues and all these other things that happened a few years ago. They shut down the servers and everything temporarily. It came back up. And then they're like, oh, yeah, we're turning it off again for a period of time. And then they just were like, we're done. No more Little Big Planet. All levels. Everything's gone. That, to me, is stupid. Like, you know, and apparently the levels are still out there, right? You could still technically
They actually exist. Kenya, the technically, servers are on.
Yeah, servers are on. Everything exists, but they've removed access to it. So all of that great content is there, but out of reach. Mm. And dude, I remember when I first played this game, I had a ton of fun. There were people, you know, from Little Big Planet 1. And that's how far back this goes, actually, in terms of creations. There was a guy that would do Studio Ghibli levels.
I remember somebody was like remaking Final Fantasy VII in Little Big Planet, or Metal Gear Solid in Little Big Planet.
Yeah.
It was one of the first games I got for PS3. I was not really a big fan of it, unfortunately. I know that the series has gone on and done a lot, but like user-generated levels and stuff like that and platforming is not usually my bag, so it just never really hit with me that hard. But after I read this article, and upon seeing, you know, like everything that went down with Mario, like I feel so bad for these fans and the people who put all this time and energy and stuff. And I know that probably 90% of them, you know, don't even think about it anymore. But, you know, for the people who would appreciate it, it would be a shame for it to be lost forever. But I think that Little Big Planet is a great, you know, platform. And the ability to make things, like, I know that they had that Dreams game that came out that was, like, basically you could make any kind of game in. But I think Little Big Planet could really have some new life if Sony put the money and energy to make it, like, a flagship PSVR 2 title where users could generate content and create levels and be able to express and make really interesting VR spaces and stuff. And also that would be a game that would generate content, which would allow Sony to kind of like take a back step and work and develop other titles. Cause like, I didn't read or listen to the whole thing, but I saw in like the tags for one of the previous podcasts that you did a couple weeks ago, you guys talked about how PSVR 2 is already seemingly kind of dead. I don't know how that conversation went, but like, I don't hear anything about it. I don't hear anything about Little Big Planet. Those seem like they would work really well together for Sony.
You would think. I mean, they have Astrobot, which is a platformer-based game, and that's, you know, on VR. And I think
he's
VR
cute
too.
Enough to be a part of Little Big Planet. You can merge that.
He's a straight up... I mean, dude, come on. Like, we all like Sackboy. I think Astrobot, I think is the name, right, for that particular title. Like, great mascots for Sony, once you've kind of lost Crash Bandicoot and everything else, right? Like, those are fantastic mascots to kind of continue moving forward with those two particular games. And then just in general, that's your Mario at the end of the day, right? With it being a platformer based game. And I do agree, like if there was some sort of VR tie-in, that's a perfect way to kind of amp up VR again, really hype that up as well as a game and kind of get things moving. But, you know, to the point on that article, we talked about how it's going the way of the Vita in that, you know, Sony has essentially pulled the plug on it. They're not giving it a whole bunch of love. They're kind of putting it to the wayside. It sold probably less than 2 million, you know, units and not a ton of games coming out. And most of what you can get is not even exclusive anyways. It's all on, you know, other VR systems. And considering that it's actually, in terms of the cost, a really good VR system.
Yeah.
You know, it's disappointing to see if Sony's not putting forward the type of support for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the big thing here is, you know, we'll never see my Michael Jackson Neverland Ranch level ever again. It's, you know, sitting on a server somewhere.
Is that something you made?
It is something I made. It had a giraffe and a carousel. It was actually a pretty awesome level and a dungeon as well. And you could probably figure what was in the dungeon.
Oh man.
Yeah. I also had the screams of younger generations in that level when you opened the dungeon and everything faded away and it was walls of cages and everything that not have any pictures in them at all that I put off, you know, pulled from the internet. Decent photos, like family type photos. So yeah, it was hilarious. It got taken down multiple times. I had to revise and eventually it stayed and people liked the level. I got thumbs up all the time on it, but it will never compare to, as I said, the Studio Ghibli levels, the rocket ship levels where you would go through to like this long tunnel and launch pad and the rocket would go up and all these other cool things. And dude, I had a blast with those games for years. And just
did you
knowing
play much
that,
Mario Maker?
Well, I played some Mario Maker and I made a little bit, but no, like I played a bit on the Wii U and just kind of over time, I was like, I'm not super interested. Like in just playing a bunch of random Mario levels.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that's all, there's obviously pre-made content, but Little Big Planet, the primary focus isn't on the the user generated content. It's on the actual story and the platforming and everything that comes with it. And that user generated content is kind of secondary to it, mm-hmm. albeit a big part. Whereas Mario Maker, yeah, you got your preset levels, but it's not like a story.
It's like any 2D Mario. Like,
yeah,
the story only goes so far to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. So, but disappointing to say the least. I hope this means that there's another Little Big Planet coming down the pipe for PS5. I'd love to play that. I'd love to get my hands on some new content and some of the old content as well. Hopefully that's what's happening here, but also doubtful. So, all right. What do you got for us?
So, this week I've got, could Helldivers 2 be PlayStation's Sea of Thieves? This is by Dano Jackson at Gamers Social Club, and it expresses exactly what I've been feeling. So this whole time that I've been away from the podcast, the one thing that I've been wanting to do more than anything is play freaking Helldivers 2. It is the most amazing looking, coolest sounding game that I'm probably not going to be good at and probably not even play all that long if I'm ever able to play it. But I can't because I don't have a PC and I don't have a PS5. And it seems ridiculous that all of this glory and democracy is out of my hands. So, Mr. Dan Dano here expresses the same thing that I'm saying. Like, hey, look how good Sea of Thieves is doing. It's hit like 40 million player count. When it came over to PlayStation, it's one of the first like cross-pollinated, cross-platform Xbox coming over, you know, trying out this, we're going to mix and mingle with PlayStation a little more than we used to. And you know what? They definitely need to do that for, you know, some of their games and realize that, hey, if we want big player bases for our games and we want to make money, we should open that cross-platform for the titles that matter. Xbox is sharing Sea of Thieves. Xbox is not bogarting Call of Duty. Give Xbox people Helldivers 2, PlayStation. Give it to us.
So here would be my argument. Why would they do that? Because at the end of the day, I think that some of these games,
because if they got 20 million more players, but that's a lot more players.
But would they get that on Xbox? You got to consider the install base for PlayStation 5.
What are Xbox players playing that's a first party, like online multiplayer shooter? Like what, Halo?
Well, Sea of Thieves, I guess, would be as close
as you
can
get. Well, no, but that's not a substitute for the game. But it's like people are playing like the same stuff that they're playing on PlayStation, which is probably like Overwatch and Fortnite and Apex Legends and all that stuff that you can play on multi-platform already.
Technically Destiny as well, right?
No, so Destiny's only on PlayStation.
I thought that it was still multi-platform.
No.
Or no, it's always Bungie. That's right. I thought they were doing that as multi-platform at some point.
Maybe, because that's about to end. Destiny 2 is like pretty much over.
Oh, yeah,
Final shape.
Well, here's the thing. I think that it is more beneficial for Microsoft to put a game like Sea of Thieves on a larger install base, which that is PlayStation, in comparison to Xbox. When you think about that huge boost of 20 million extra players, whatever it comes out to, or 40 million total, how much of that is coming directly from, you know, Sony fans who are playing on PlayStation? They have the console, the install base is big enough, versus if they're like, hey, we're gonna put Helldivers 2 on Xbox. I don't think that benefits Sony the way it benefits Microsoft.
If they open
Microsoft.
It up to PC and Xbox, and then you have the ecosystem that everybody can play, then your numbers will be as high as they possibly can because it'll be open. Everybody who can play will be able to play.
I guess from a sales perspective,
except for Nintendo people.
Yeah, because it's Nintendo. I guess from a sales perspective, to me, it doesn't make sense with Xbox having a much lower install base.
It's not even a full price game.
Oh, I know. It's like $40, right? Yeah.
How come you don't have it, John? Why aren't you out there spreading democracy on my behalf? I'm offended.
Well, I'll tell you, because I haven't played Pal World. I've been neglecting my pals for some time, and I need to get back to them first, complete that game. And then maybe I will help spread democracy. But I'm thinking, like I said, New Vegas is my next title. So we'll see how it all goes, Ryan. Maybe I'll spread democracy for you. Maybe I won't. We'll see. Maybe
sounds
I'll
like
wait
a traitor
till,
to me.
Maybe I'll wait till there's a Steam sale. Maybe I'll wait till that.
It's not on PC?
It is on PC.
Oh, it is on PC. No, that's right.
You literally said it in your intro.
Yeah, no. I just don't have Xbox because it's on PC and PlayStation. That's yeah. right.
What you need to do is play it on your PC at home.
I don't have a PC at home.
You do. You have a laptop.
It's a 2016 laptop with no graphics card. It's not a PC.
I know. It'll just look like a 2016 graphics card game. It'll suck. But you'll still
No, be... there is no graphics card. Right. It's got integrated graphics. It won't run.
There are no limits to democracy and spreading it. Except maybe your computer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, long story short, though, I don't know. I could see the benefit, what you're saying, in getting a larger player base. I just question why Sony would do it.
I mean, money.
But does it... Yes, but does it truly, truly benefit them long-term to start taking games that are... They've already... Like, this
is not
a
system seller.
Oh, I know. This was a first... Well, I mean, it's starting to become, I think. This was a first for them to release simultaneously PC, day one, PC and PS5, right? At the same period of time. A lot of great success there. But something like this, is it beneficial to them long-term if they start putting their games also on a competitive or a competitor console?
Considering that they're probably going to get rid of like their box after the next generation, like everybody, I mean, we've talked about that so many times, like Xbox is already getting ahead of that curve and pitching themselves as being like, hey, you want to play our games? We'll let you play our games. And trying to go with that approach.
Maybe it'll just be the collective. That's what it'll be. It'll just be the big three putting all of their stuff on one giant thing digitally. And we'll say goodbye to physical media forever, Ryan.
Yeah.
We'll play it next to our robots at the same time. That'd be great.
Maybe they'll all unite and we'll get a real Okama GameSphere.
Oh my God, dude. The Okama GameSphere.
Oh, come on, games here.
Oh, geez. Okay. All right, let's get into our inflation deflation. You know, I just realized we didn't mention in the beginning what we actually were doing an inflation deflation on. So we are doing an inflation deflation this week on Silent Hill, The Short Message. I can tell you.
I said brief and quiet. Everybody understood what I was talking about there.
You know what? It's because we didn't say post-it notes. If we would have said post-it notes and being scared of post-it notes, then that would have been it.
Yeah.
But this was developed by Konami Digital Entertainment and Hexadrive. It was published by Konami. It was directed by Motoya Okamoto, and it was released in January of 2024. It is a psychological horror game. It has got around a 3 out of 5 reception. Overall synopsis here is Anita follows her graffiti artist friend into the villa, an abandoned apartment complex in Kettistad, Germany. There, psychological horror ensues, and she faces her own past of monsters and the familiar paranormal dread of Silent Hill. I think you normally did the synopsis before we...
I wrote it.
Yeah, you wrote it, so it worked.
That's all right.
Or so you wikied it, one of the two.
I wrote it from the wiki. I read the wiki and I was like, this is basically what it says.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this was a free-to-play release. They came out a few months back. Not great reception. It was something we were going to do before I mysteriously vanished into my own Silent Hill Hell Dimension for a while. But having returned from that, I can say, yeah, it wasn't great, and I didn't take pictures while I was there. Same with this game. I mean, this is, from what I was reading and from what kind of the general gist, this is a great framework. Like, seeing this game doesn't necessarily make people upset because it's a free-to-play thing. So it's not really setting you back much more than a few hours of your time. But hopefully from this engine, they can make a really good new Silent Hill property moving forward that maybe is a little more subtler with some of its themes and what it's saying.
Yeah, so you play as Anita, as Ryan, and I were kind of mentioning this whole game, trying to find your friend Maya, right, who is a graffiti artist. And it does have that Silent Hill vibe. You wake up at a mysterious location wondering where the hell you are and go through crazy-looking corridors. And, you know, it's creepy. And you wonder, why is this person still walking through these corridors? Why haven't they left this building? And why do they continue to move forward? And then, yeah, I think from a, you know, from a gameplay standpoint, it very much falls in line with just about any Silent Hill, except for the fact you can't run, oddly enough. Except in, like, when you're being chased by things.
I don't know. I never even thought to like hit a run button. I mean, it's just
I tried.
It's a walk around and read stuff game.
Yeah, walk around and read stuff about what's happening. You see all the different artwork from this friend, and you know there will be spoilers here in a second, but you know, you go through to various levels, kind of figuring out like where's your friend Maya, and you're getting these text messages from Maya saying, "Oh, I'm at X location. You got to find me." Blah blah. So there are a lot of, you know, little hints here and there about like your background and your life and kind of what got you to this point with Maya. But come to find out as you kind of progress through the game, and there is some creepiness. We did see a couple chase scenes where something was in the distance or whatever the hell that was.
There's like some flowery like branch flowery monster that chases you. And
oh, it's a cherry blossom tree.
Yeah. In those, situations, it's pretty interesting. Cause like I love how the PS5 controller like makes the noise. So it really makes you feel like something's like right next to you, right behind you.
Yeah, that was a really nice aspect of it. You know, so the PS5, the control's fantastic for games like this. Like, I absolutely love it. But you finally get to where Maya's supposed to be, and then you get a call that says, like, oh, I can't believe Maya died, blah, blah, blah. Turns out she killed herself. There's a suicide hotline thing that comes across for the game. Kind of figured that would happen. And then you get chased by the cherry blossom branch monster thing. You make your way out, and you yourself jump off of the building and try to kill yourself, and come to find out you're still in the villa, and you get a text message from Maya saying you can't leave until you find it, and you don't know what the hell it is that you're trying to find. And that's kind of where we stopped. So we played about, you know, 40 minutes or so, got through it. I actually, you know, I think the 3 out of 5 is actually kind of unfair. I mean, I'm in total agreement with you. It's definite framework. There's a lot of quirky things. Like, I wasn't a fan of the cinematic, you know,
the live action cuts.
Yeah, the live action cuts of Maya, like, it kind of engrossed you a little bit in it, but it wasn't what I was expecting because the character designs are kind of flawed. So you have like a weird kind of character design, and it's like, here's FMV.
You know, the game was so good looking, but the character models were the one thing that I thought was lacking the most.
Yeah, the overall like design of the building itself and all of the extra elements and even the creature that was chasing us was pretty good graphically. I thought the sound quality was good. I thought the music fit well. You know, the story is kind of cliche in a sense in what we're experiencing, but it did kind of catch us both off guard when the phone call comes in, like, oh, Maya's dead. And you kind of said it best. It's like right when I was starting to disengage with the game, it got me right back in.
Yeah, that was the moment where I was like, whoa, okay, I'm back. Yeah. What's happening? Who's dead now?
Yeah, so that kind of caught us, you know, and then, of course, we jump, and you're like, oh, we won the game by jumping off the building. And it's like, no, we actually just kind of got back into it. So I think it has piqued my interest enough. I would say a 3.5 might be a little more fair here, which would generally be a 7 out of 10, you know, on the scale of things. I think that's a little more fair than like a 6 or a 5 out of 10. So, yeah, I mean, brass tacks on this. There is no complete in box. There is no loose copy. It's a digital-only free release that came out kind of unexpectedly, actually. Really, I think, to hype up Silent Hill 2. And I liked it, dude. I thought that for a couple hours of your time, if you were to consider time as money, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's worth the time frame. You know, 2 hours to beat a game and it's free? I mean, how much better can you get on that, dude? And we were just talking about this. Short games that have certain experiences for older people like us, this is a great title that, you know, you don't have to spend a dollar on it, and you can just go ahead and, you know, spend a few hours of your time, you know, running away from a cherry blossom monster.
Yeah, and I mean, you know what, the worst case scenario, just like have a couple drinks, play it at night, you try to make the environment as spooky as you can, you know, you'll probably have a better time than we did just playing it, you know, fresh in the afternoon. You could do a lot to help yourself out here and probably get the most out of it. It's definitely not a waste of your time. And if you're a Silent Hill person, I guess it's at least as good as the last kind of stuff that came out, because it hasn't been great for a while.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, check it out if you haven't checked it out yet. I think our rating on this, I mean, how can you not say deflated?
Yeah.
I mean, it has to be deflated at this
unless
point.
They gave you money, it couldn't get better.
That's true. Yeah, it is a free game, so definitely check it out. Well, this has been episode 283 of the Game Deflators podcast. My name's John.
I'm still Ryan. Imagine that.
Yeah. And thanks for listening.